scores! Gilmore scores! The ball three left.
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right, let's get things going. Happy Monday. We are underway on this Monday, April 8th. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Steinberg and look who's back for the week. It's Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Hi, buddy.
Hey, buddy. Feels like it's been a hot minute. Hey.
It has been a hot minute. Welcome back.
Thank you.
This segment of Flames Talk is brought to you by Hyundai. And that was a pretty fun installment of the Battle of Alberta on Saturday night, I must say. I thought the Flames played really hard. The thing that I was really curious about was, they were saying all the right things on Friday and Saturday. On Saturday morning, they were really talking about how fired up they were for this game and how it doesn't matter where the two teams are in the standings, that this is the Battle of Alberta. We're going to be engaged. We're going to come out and play like it's a huge game. And they put their money where their mouth is. I really like the way. I know the result wasn't what they were looking for, and there was a lot of disappointment. I mean, I talked to Nazem Kadri post-game on Saturday, and Naz is a pro and is always going to give you an answer. And is always going to be honest about it. But you could tell that as much as he really liked the effort from his group, that really burned that they did not beat them on Saturday. The fact that he scored such a big game-tying goal, and a few minutes later, Bouchard scored the game winner. I end that as much as they're out of the playoffs, I end that really, really ate Kadri and some other veterans up inside knowing how that game went. And that is a good thing. You want them to be pissed off coming off the ice. Look, the Oilers are a better team. Right now, the Oilers are significantly more talented, significantly deeper, significantly higher end than the Flames are when you compare the rosters. But the Flames still put together an effort that they felt should have gotten them 2 points on that night. And there were circumstances that went into it for Edmonton. They had clinched the night before with an emotional win over Colorado. Third game in four nights, second half of back-to-back. That felt like a letdown game all over it for the Oilers, even though it was a Battle of Alberta. And I think the fact it was Calgary got them up for it and kind of mitigated some of the other factors. But that was not Edmonton's best game. But the Flames played their asses off, and I like that they were pissed off afterwards. I like that still, as much as they know their fate, I like that they were not happy about the way that game went.
Well, and you're never going to be happy when you lose to the Edmonton Oilers. It doesn't matter if they're first overall in the NHL and you're 32nd or somewhere in between, some sort of variation. It's the Battle of Alberta. It's going to be a heated rivalry. We know how hot it's been over the last couple of seasons.
And it was heated
on
Saturday.
And it was heated in that game. So, yeah, you're absolutely right when the likes of Nazem Kadri and the other veterans in that room should be upset that they didn't win, because you always want to go out and you always want to beat your biggest rival. You always want to stick it to them. Again, doesn't matter if the Edmonton Oilers punch a ticket to the playoffs and you've been eliminated. There is so much outside of just the scope of the standings that gets you up for a game like that. And to come out on the losing end of it, especially when you believe in your heart of hearts that you did everything you could to put yourself in a winning situation. And I think they outplayed them. Again, you mentioned it was the second of back-to-backs the night after the Edmonton Oilers had clinched the game. It was the third and fourth with travel for the Edmonton Oilers coming down to Calgary. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter the circumstances whatsoever. If you're the Calgary Flames, you want to beat the Edmonton Oilers. If you're the Edmonton Oilers, you want to beat the Calgary Flames. And from the home side perspective, they did a lot of really good things that put themselves into a position to win that game.
Yep.
They certainly had the will. And I think the difference in the game, and it's going to be funny to say this, because I thought Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in particular were eliminated by that Backlund, Coleman, Sharon Govich trio outside
even
of
still got 3 points
outside of the, like, from the sheer dynamic standpoint.
And they also at 5-on-5 were,
at 5-on-5
well eliminated.
Calgary did so many good things to win that game and just couldn't come up with the result.
And that tells you something about the Oilers, which we'll get to in a little bit as well. I just really enjoyed the game. Was exactly what I was hoping for. And you know, I think most Flames fans were still pretty upset about the result, just because even a team that is going in a different direction and is building for the future, and as many fans that are like, yeah, you know, again, I think it's Dan and Cochran who came up with this, but enjoy the wins, embrace the losses. I think there's a lot of embracing of the losses right now, knowing where, I mean, the Flames are now 3 points out of a top five spot in the draft order, or at the very least a top five spot in the lottery odds. They're 3 points back of Montreal in the reverse standings, if you will. That's a significant move from 8-5. And so I understand that. And yet the one game that you're like, I don't care about the reverse standings. I want them to beat the Oilers. I get that. But, you know, I think what you saw against Winnipeg and what you saw against Edmonton is what you want to see in the final six games. Play your asses off, show some heart, show some emotion, come to work with your compete level, and then let the cards fall where they may. And an effort like that probably beats San Jose. Maybe it doesn't beat LA or Vancouver, but it probably beats a San Jose or an Anaheim on a lot of nights. So come to play and let the cards fall wherever they're going to. And I think that's what most people are wanting to see. And if they play similar to the way they played against the Jets and the Oilers the rest of the way, I think you can be happy about the way the Flames finish off the season. This was Nazem Kadri on our post-game show on Saturday night, to kind of talking about just that with six games to go down the stretch.
Obviously try to win first and foremost. I think anytime the puck drops and you have an opportunity to wear an NHL jersey, you got to do that with pride. And I don't think that should be an issue for us. We're gonna play to the end and hopefully come up with some good vibes.
That's what you saw on Saturday. That's what you want to see the final six games. And I think when you hear Nazem Kadri say it like that and say it as you know, there's a lot of conviction behind when he's saying that. I think it resonates for you and I, and I also think it resonates for guys inside that room, knowing Kadri, Uyghur, these are two of the guys that they are laying it out there every single night, and they are trying to drag the team into it on a night-by-night basis, and I think it's working. And it may not always kind of coincide or correspond with a win and with the exact result they're looking for. But I think this team continues to follow the lead of guys like Kadri, Uyghur, and a few others. And that's really impressive work by some of these leaders on this team.
Yeah, there's a lot of vets dragging the entire team into the fight. And that is exactly what you need out of the guys like Mackenzie Uyghur, Nazem Kadri, who, they're going to be disappointed and grumpy and upset that this is a team that now we're talking about, can they get to fifth in the NHL draft lottery standings? But they're still going out there night in, night out, shift in, shift out, and putting their best skate forward. I rolled my eyes a little bit by saying best skate forward, not best foot forward, but you get the gist.
Yeah.
But organizationally,
you need to leave.
Isn't that exactly what you want if you're, say, Craig Conroy, for example, where you've got your veterans buying in, well, veterans leading the way, trying to drag everybody else in to buy into, doesn't matter where we are in the standings, we still need to go out there and play with pride and play with energy and play with compete and still not get the wins. Because if you're looking at a higher draft pick, losses are wins at this point. Embrace the losses, as you sort of mentioned there. You mentioned Dan mentioning.
I think it's Dan and Cochran. I want to make sure that I am crediting that properly. It could be, right?
But it's a best case scenario for management and looking at this whole big picture thing is you've still got everybody competing and you're still looking ahead at the NHL draft, which is going to be such an important piece of this organization's future moving forward. Maybe not immediately, maybe not next season, but in terms of the retool that you're trying to establish, very important. So not only are you not getting letdowns from some of your biggest, most high profile key players, but you're also not letting that mentality seep into your room, but you're also not harming your odds when it comes to the draft lottery.
Wonder if Dan and Cochran knows Mike from Canmore. Remember Mike from Canmore? Royal Canadian Air Force?
I don't.
Really?
Yeah, sorry, man.
That's some straight-up Canadiana from our era.
And I saw the look of disappointment in your face, and I didn't even want to BS my way through it.
That hurts.
Because if you tossed a reference sometime later in the show and I didn't have it, you would have buried me. I'd rather just be straight-up and honest.
That hurts right deep down to the car. I'll get over it, though. I will. I love some of what we saw on set. I don't know if you saw the clip of Rasmus Anderson chirping.
Oh, yeah.
Evan Bouchard. Like, oh my goodness, it was so good.
This one?
I was like, of course Bouchard got the last laugh with the game winner. But I was like, okay, and I'll give Raz a lot of credit. He was dialed too. He went right after EK Evander Kane.
Couple times.
Right from the get go, first shift, he was up in Kane's kitchen. That is the most off his game. Like, Evander Kane was maybe the second most impactful player in that playoff series from 2022 outside of McDavid, because Leon was playing on a broken ankle, right?
Yeah.
Kane may have been McDavid was the difference, but Kane may have been the difference outside of 97 in that series 2 years ago. And has been very good for the, but that is the most off his game, irrelevant, detrimental Evander Kane I have ever seen as a member of the Oilers, specifically in a game against the Flames. Like, that he almost lost the game for Edmonton by
that
his
penalty,
that ridiculous penalty that he took on Dryden Hunt for no reason. Dryden Hunt wasn't even the guy who crashed the net. There was zero reason for him to do that. I was just like, what are you doing? Like, that is the, they just taken a 2-0 lead, and he took one of the dumbest penalties I can remember in a long time, and the Flames scored on it. So I liked that. I liked how Rasmus was going after him and other guys were going after him. I liked how when there was that big fracas in front of Pickard, nobody backed down from Kane, even though, I don't know, Kane's probably taking every single member of the Flames to the woodshed. And that's a scary, scary man when he's fighting. Like, so Kane's probably winning in every single situation, but nobody backed down. I won't lie. Like, the Perry chirping at the end, whatever, you're so
end
bad.
End of the second period? Or
end of the game.
Okay.
Did you see at the end of the
game?
Sorry,
I wasn't sure if you were referring to Perry and Evander Kane getting into a heated argument at the end of the second period, or are you talking Perry post-game?
Post at the very end of the game with his chirping. That's
passion.
Good. Just adds to the battle. That's Corey Perry's, first, second Battle of Alberta game?
Second.
I like that. Like, get the Flames fans hate Corey Perry, and that's just going to up it if he's back next year. Like, I loved all of it. This rivalry is still good. And despite the fact that one team is fighting for a Stanley Cup and the other team is retooling and is not going to make the playoffs, I loved that that game gave us a real rivalry game once again. And honestly, I can't wait for the four games they play next year, even though the Oilers will be expected to be up here and the Flames will be expected to be down here.
Apologies, because this might take us on a side direction or a tangent, but I just have to ask, is there a member of the Calgary Flames that hates the Edmonton Oilers more than Rasmus Anderson?
I think there's a few. I think Nazem Kadri has built that up real nice.
I just think with Rasmus Anderson, how long he's been here, how long he's been a part of it, the playoff series, all that, I feel like Rasmus is...
I think he gets dialed in, absolutely, and you know, I think that he still, he and Noah struggled in that series against the Oilers. I think that still sticks in his craw.
I mean, in all fairness, though, he
did
score 155-footer in that series.
He did. That is still one of my biggest regrets, is that that goal didn't swing the series like it should have. That should have been Lidstrom on Kluche from center ice. Like, that should have been the type of goal that turns an entire series. And instead, the Oilers still won that game. Had the Flames, because that was the 3-3 goal, was it not?
It tied it. It was a shorthanded goal as well.
It was 3-0 Oil, and then it was 3-3. And that was in Edmonton. If the Flames find a way to get that to overtime and win, the entire look of the series, I think, changes. Unfortunately, Nugent Hopkins scored, and they lost the game. Anyway, I don't want to talk
about it. I digress.
That's very sad. Read you a few texts before we get into some of the specifics at 960-960. This says solid dive by Anderson. Also, yeah, the
retribution from Dreisaitl.
Tit for tat slash. Yeah. Raz sold that pretty good. Good on him. This says from Heath. Ask Michael Backlund how he feels about the Oilers. Agreed. Yep. This says, you guys haven't been watching the Oilers the last couple of months. EK has been far more irrelevant than he was on Saturday night. I agree. I watched plenty of Oilers. I just meant in a Flames game. I can't remember Kane being, even the 6-3 win the Flames took in Edmonton in February, Kane was far more effective than he was on Saturday. He was either a non-factor or a detrimental factor. This says, afternoon, guys. I really think Kadri's been awesome this season. I really hope he decides he wants to stay and help build this team. His impact has been awesome on the younger players. That comes from Curtis in Monterey. What else we got here at 960, 960? Mick says, Jason Bukala has Yakimchuk fifth, and that's where the Flames need to be to get him. If Yakimchuk is the guy you want, then probably top five gives you a chance at getting him. Wedley writes, I'm wondering, he says, Corey Perry guy, my new favorite overtime caller. He really wanted to talk about Corey Perry. Yeah, we cut it out of the podcast, but there's a guy who called Saturday, and all he wanted to do was talk about Corey Perry and how he's a Canadian hero. I'm like, dude, this is not the show for that. this is Flames Talk. He's like, I thought that we talked hockey on this show. I'm like, no, the name of the show is Flames Talk. Call Reed. Call my good buddy Reed in Edmonton. Talk about
Corey
Perry
show there
all day on the Oilers postgame show. But yeah, this is not really this is Flames Talk. We want to keep it focused on the Flames. We don't need to sing Corey Perry's virtues on this show. It didn't make much sense to me. Steinberg Vickers, this hour of Flames Talk underway. A couple of rapid fire topics for you on this Monday afternoon. Connor Zeri returns to the lineup, and as they were going through line rushes in the pregame show, so I'm sitting up there beside Matty Rose, and we're watching them set up for line rushes. We knew Backlund was playing. It was a game-time decision. But then I saw Sharon Govich move over to the left side, and I'm such a dork for warm-ups that I really enjoy watching the different tendencies and
don't
how
call yourself a dork on that.
I'm a bit of a warm-up nerd. I love watching from up there and just seeing. I love watching Kuzmenko. I love watching Huberdeau and how he goes about his business. I love watching Uyghur. It's really cool to see their routines. You know, Huberdeau's always the guy getting the pucks out of the net and start distributing them for some of the different drills and the line rushes. Anyway, so as they go set up for the line rushes, I'm like, nope, Sharon Govich, what are you doing? You're supposed to be over there. Okay. So I'm like, who the hell is going to play center then?
Well, and remember when Michael Backlund was questionable or a game time decision, we were having a conversation the morning of.
Who
do you move there?
And the answer was, even though Backlund played, the answer was Zeri.
Yeah.
And there he was taking a line rush. I'm like, oh, Zeri, Hunt, and Huberdeau. And I thought that line looked really good. And head coach Ryan Huska said Monday morning after practice, he also liked Zeri in his first game down the middle after coming back in after missing a game as a healthy scratch.
I liked him. I thought he did a really good job. So we'll look to give him another opportunity there if we can, based on our lineup and all that stuff that will go on here over the next little bit. But I thought he did a good job. He was moving his feet again, and I found he was competitive on and around the puck.
I thought Zeri with Huberdeau and Hunt was very effective all night long. They went not hard match, but pretty close. They went up a lot against the Ryan McLeod line and did the job. Zeri's line, 77.3% possession. So a 5-on-5 shot attempts when that line was on the ice, 17-5 in favor of Calgary. They were almost 89% at 5-on-5 expected goals. High danger scoring chances were 4-0 for that line when they were out there. I'm all for that line getting another go as this road trip goes on. I know they got heavy offensive zone starts. I think they were at 80% when it was all said and done, which makes sense. But that line, they came to play. They looked really, really good. I am all for Zeri and Huberdeau, and whether you want to put Hunt or Coronado or whoever you want to put there, I am all for that. And all for seeing that continue going into this game Tuesday against San Jose.
I don't know how you don't just go right back to that line. I mean, you rattled off the stats right there. I know it's a small sample size. We're talking about one game. We're probably talking about, you know, somewhere between 10 and 12 minutes of 5-on-5, even strength time. But 4-0 high danger, 88.8% expected goals, and a 77.3% possession metric. Like, that's just automatic that you go. And you can say what you want about the offensive zone starts. And we talked a lot about that when it was Huberdeau, Sharon Govich, Kuzmenko. But you've still got to win that draw, keep the play at that end, and not let the puck go 200 feet the other way. And that's what that line did all night long. And listen, do I know what the future holds for Connor Zary, whether he's a left winger, whether he's a center long term? No, I don't know that. I don't think the Calgary Flames necessarily know that. You're afforded a little bit of runway here to experiment and tinker with different things. This is one of those things that I feel needs to continue, because if you can identify whether or not over a 6 or 7 game sample that Connor Zary might be a center option for you over the long term, that's something you most definitely need to explore. And to be perfectly honest, I think it would be welcomed within the organization, just because you look at kind of the center depth and trying to figure out, okay, who slots where long term. Connor Zary down the middle long term potentially gives the Flames more options than Connor Zary the left winger long term.
Yeah, and I mean, I give Huska a lot of credit for sitting him down, talking about a mental reset, and then bringing him back in and putting him down the middle for the first time all season and keeping him there all night long. I'm keeping that line together. And I honestly don't think there's any reason to move him away from center for the rest of the year, because he looked good in game one, and maybe he struggles a couple games. That's a tough position to play. We know what Sharon Govich is as a center iceman.
Yep.
He can get the job done passably, but he's not a driver. He's not best suited, in my eyes, playing down the middle. So I think it just makes sense. You know, Sharon Govich, see if he can get to 33, 34, 35, something like that before the end of the year. Play him on the wing and give Zary some meaningful reps here down the middle for the final six. That it just, it would makes a lot of sense to keep him there between now and the end of the year.
I think so. I mean, what do you have to lose? You have 6 games remaining. He's already played the one. It's an experiment. And I agree with you on the Sharon Govich front, where I think he did an admirable job being put in a tough position of, okay, now that Lindholm's gone, we need you to be a center. And I thought he did well in that. But I think he's more beneficial being a left winger. So in order to make him a left winger, you've got to have somebody that can play down the middle.
All right,
wherever, whatever side he plays on, but just winger in principle. But with that is now you have a hole at center ice, and I think it would behoove yourselves, if you're the Calgary Flames, to give Zary that opportunity to see if there's something there, something that you'd want to explore next season with him down the middle.
And you've got a couple of really good road opportunities in LA and in Vancouver to let, you know, the Kings put out the Kopitar line against Zary. Like, hey, we've got an opportunity, young center, let's put out our big line. See how he does. And maybe they get pounded, but see how it works. Or let Rick Tocchet go Miller's line or Pedersen's line against Zary, and maybe they get crushed. Or maybe he does the job but regardless, it's good development. It's good. Like, if Zary's line sees 80% of their shifts against the Pedersen line or something like that in Vancouver, and the Pedersen line eats their lunch, great. That's a great opportunity for Zary. He says, holy hell.
It's a teaching moment.
This is what it's going to take to play center against the best of the best in the NHL. I have no problem with that. I think it's only good for the Flames if that's the way things go.
Again, might take you sideways a little bit. How would you feel about doing a bit of a divergence with Martin Pospisil as well? Because the two players Ryan Huska identified as potentially playing down the middle, Connor Zary, we've seen it. Martin Pospisil was the other.
Yeah, I spoke about that on Monday. I was like, I'm not feeling it a little bit. He kind of went, I think I like him better as a winger, is how I'd paraphrase that.
Fair enough.
And I
understand that, and I think that's where he's best suited. And I think that's where his game is best suited, because if he's playing down the middle, he might not always be the guy that can be first on the forecheck. So you're removing some of that antagonism from his game. But I was just curious on that front, because he was the second name mentioned by Huska on Saturday morning.
Kuzmenko, now 9 points in his last 5 games. 5-game point streak, 9-5, 2 more points against the Oilers. I know the games do not mean a ton, but I am starting to wonder if the Flames have found something here more and more. So, kind of 4 things. Number one, you've got an Andre Kuzmenko who wants to be here and wants to be on a team that wants him. He felt like Vancouver didn't want him, and rightfully so. He was a salary dump, and I understand what the Canucks are doing, although their power play has struggled ever since he's left. But Yeah, it made sense. They were after Lindholm, and I still think Lindholm can be a great fit for him in the playoffs. I know it hasn't worked so well, and he's hurt right now, but I think they're kind of baby gloving, kid gloving it right now, just making sure he's good for the playoffs. But Kuzmenko's, I want to be on a team that wants me, one. Number two, he was battling an illness for a few weeks there that, you know, really hit him hard and then had some lingering effects. He also was dealing with a back injury that he was able to play through, but really limited his effectiveness in terms of what he could do. I think it was kind of like a lot of seizures back there. And so he did not have full mobility, I don't believe. And that's behind him now. So Kuzmenko's back issues behind him, the illness behind him. He wants to be here. And also, as the illness and the back thing was going on, really committed himself to better conditioning. And the Flames feel like that's really paying off. I wonder, I just, look, he'll always have his defensive shortcomings, all that type of stuff. But I just, this guy scored 39 goals in this league as a 26 and 27-year-old. I know he's having a down year, but I think he's one of the top two or three guys since the deadline or in that respect in terms of what they've done on their new teams. I don't know. I wonder if we're starting to see more of the Kuzmenko and the type of player that the Flames could be getting going into next season. Because I don't think it makes sense to be flipping him during the offseason. I think it seems far more likely and far more sensible for him to be back with the team to start next year. You take all the things that I just said into training camp, into next season, plus it's contract year. I wonder if the Flames don't have something they could think about extending. Seems like they finally found the right line for him. Pospisil's skill set, Kadri's ability to elevate, doesn't matter who's around him. That line feels like maybe you've got something to put in pen to start next year. I don't know. I'm starting to get more, less and less skeptical and more optimistic on Kuzmenko. He has impressed the hell out of me the last five games.
I promise you this, Patrick, you can't accidentally score 39 goals in an NHL season without
in
having some
year,
as a rookie. Now, granted, a more mature rookie, he has a ton of KHL experience, but it doesn't matter if you're in your first season, your fifth season, your 10th season, you don't go out and accidentally score 39 goals. You have to have a basis for skill. And he certainly has that. As enigmatic as he can be at times, he has that skill. There's no doubt about it. You want to go back to talking about warmups and watching players, and Kuzmenko is a guy I guarantee you watch all the time because you're just like, how does he do these things? And even in sometimes in games, there'll be some passes and like, how does he see that? He has the skill. It's whether or not he can apply each certain trait at the right time for the right play. And I think that's some stuff.
You seem more skeptical than I do.
No, I think it's there. I think sometimes the decision making or the hope is not. He makes a lot of hope plays for me where he tries something and it's probably a 30% chance of completion when there's a safer or, you know, what a coach might call a smarter play to be made.
See, but I've seen a whole lot less of those lately.
But no, I'm getting there. Don't worry. He's removed a lot of that from his game. And even despite the fact that you mentioned the back issues, the conditioning issues, the illness that he had, he's still second on the team in goals scored since being acquired, despite one playing four less games than everybody else, despite the injury, the illness, and everything. He's still got 9 goals in 23 games. That is a pretty productive pace for a guy that was a cap dump to facilitate a trade for Elias Lindholm to the Vancouver Canucks.
Now that he's over these things coinciding with playing on Kadri's line, you're like, holy cow, maybe there's something here.
There is, yeah.
Maybe there's, and I'm saying like, maybe there's more than we thought. And maybe there's, because I was saying very, very loudly prior to him getting on that line in the St. Louis game, where does Kuzmenko fit? Like, how do you even find a spot for him going forward? He can't play on your fourth line. Right now, he's not playing in your top six very well. Well, you coincide him finally getting past that back thing that was plaguing him for 3 or 4 weeks and an illness that had a lot of lingering effects, and you put him with Kadri's. Okay, maybe they found something. Anyway,
he's playing to a 32-goal pace over an 82-game season as a member of the Calgary Flames.
Yeah.
Not a bad rebound.
This text says the team needs fun guys like Kuzmenko and Pelche in the room. I agree. This is, man, you guys flip-flop on players daily. Have you ever covered an NHL team before? That's what happens. You're allowed to change your opinions on things. That's part of the beauty of what we do, is admitting that maybe we were off on something and then changing our opinion. That's what makes this medium good. If I were to just sit here and, like, what would be the fun of that if I... That seems like really, really disingenuous conversation if I stick to an opinion so hard when it's clearly going the other way. Yeah, of course I'm going to flip-flop when evidence suggests that maybe I was wrong prior. It's good to be wrong every once in a while. Anyway, good stuff on the text line. 960, 960. Steinberg Vickers, we're underway this hour on Flames Talk, and this segment of Flames Talk is brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960, 960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Monday, which means it's time to look at the future of the Flames, brought to you by Oncolytics Biotech, fighting cancer by unleashing the power of the immune system. To learn more about how an idea originating in Calgary inspired hope for many, visit OncolyticsBiotech.com. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on this lovely Monday edition of Flames Talk. It's lovely to say. It's lovely on a Monday. And on a Monday, we say hello to the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Trent Cull joins us on the future of the Flames right now after a 5-2 win over Bakersfield Friday, 5-2 loss on the road against the Condors on Saturday. So a 1-1 weekend for the Wranglers as they go down the stretch towards the postseason. Hello, coach. How are we doing today?
Good. How are you guys doing? Just trying to, you know, get my eyes fixed here from that eclipse. But, I'm good.
I got too paranoid about it, so I just averted my eyes and looked at the ground until about 2 p.m. So I'm glad that I survived it. How do you evaluate the weekend for your group? A win and a loss in Bakersfield. How do you look back at this weekend, coach?
I guess I'd say we're 50-50 or average or whatever you want to say. You know, I mean, loved how we played the one night, and the night two, I, you know, didn't love how we played, and we didn't help ourselves either. You know, we had a couple, you know, I would say silly mistakes or some errors that didn't help us, and we kind of kept compounding that as we went, and 3-1 game to start the third, and we actually started great. We had like two or three really good shifts, and then the third shift, we make another error, and ends up we give up a breakaway from the red line out. So yeah, you know what? Just some great things in the night before, and then some things that, you know, uncharacteristic, or you know, things we'd like to have cleaned up at this time of the year. You know, in the second night,
You're in this Pacific Division playoff battle, and there's so little separating everybody right now. And I would imagine that was the case once again. Like if it's you and Bakersfield in the playoffs or whatever the case may be, like the margin of error seems so, so slim in this division right now.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, I mean, I know people are probably more attentive, obviously, to the NHL and especially, and I totally understand that here in Flames land, you know? And so, but it is crazy, you know. I mean, it's awesome that we've found a way to get in the playoffs. First of all, with all as we've gone through weekly, our upheaval and how things have changed for us throughout the year, and the great opportunities that the Flames have given the players for the Wranglers, right? But for us to find a way to sneak in is great, and it's hard to believe that if you win a game, you could pop yourself up into. So right now we're in seventh. We could be popping ourselves up into what is it, fifth?
Yeah.
If we were to win, and then if you won two games, all of a sudden, then you have a chance of being in third or fourth, and then, you know, and then if you won four games, you could be in second. So it's we're down to four games, but some teams have still got six that are in that mix with us from second through seventh. So I guess we'll just kind of see. We can try to take care of our own business, and that's all we can kind of do, and then whatever everybody else does, we'll see how it kind of all trickles out.
How much is home ice kind of a driving force? You mentioned how you can move up and down the Pacific Division table. Does the chance to host and to have your choice for home ice in round one, is that something that's driving your group or could be a motivator for your group here?
I think it is, but I also think that, too, like, we're just trying to play the best hockey we can play, you know, and I've always been, I think I've told you guys this, too, is just more a day-by-day focus, and I don't think we can say, yeah, we want home ice, and we're, you know what I mean? I think it's more just making sure we're tight, we're doing everything we can. We've also got some different guys that are getting looks here, too, like young guys coming in, new guys, so... Yeah. It's a balance, and I mean, but I don't know some days too the right recipe, you know. Are you playing guys that have been here? Are you got new guys that can help you? I mean, you're trying to do as much as you can and entertain all these things, because I guess the focus would be to play your best hockey in 3 weeks heading into your first game in the playoffs, right? So, but we've got, you know, different guys and young draft picks coming in every day, so it's just trying to balance that out over the next 2 weeks here.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Trent, because that was exactly where I was going to go next. It's like you read your mind, because you've got some really interesting lineup dilemmas every single night, because you're right, you've got some new players with you. You might be getting some more in here after a few junior teams and draft picks have become available as a result of some junior teams being eliminated. How do you balance that? You talk about it being a balance, some young guys, development, getting them in, some enthusiasm, all that type of stuff, balanced with a playoff chase and trying to fight for home ice and getting your veterans the games they need. What is there a tried and true formula there?
These are all great questions. I wish I had an answer. just being honest, I mean, I think it's different for everybody, and I just think it's different for every guy and every scenario and every, you know, like, you know, are we sticking these young guys in to see where they're finished and how they're doing? We want to see these players. They're good young players. They're good young draft picks, you know? And so, and then we have other guys, free agents that have signed out of college, and we're trying to give them some looks too. But like you said, we're trying to balance ice time. I guess I guess you'd say game readiness, but then we've got all, if you dig deeper, then how is that preparing your specialty teams? How is it preparing your line combinations? How is it doing your D pairs? You know, there's so it's so, there's still a lot going on, and I'll be honest with you, like, I mean, it's a lot. I wish in a way, I almost wish some of the junior guys kept going, you know what I mean? Because I wanted them to experience their playoffs at their level as much as that's the goal, hope and goal is. I'm sure you could say that the same thing's happening with the Flames as well. They'd say about that, or management would say about us, right? So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think we're going to have all hands on deck. It's going to be great for our development team. They're going to take a huge role in helping some of these young guys as they turn pros or be around pro hockey and be in playoffs, and then with the balancing act of everything else. So it's just it's a great situation to be in. I don't think there's a perfect recipe for this, and but hopefully there is, and hopefully we're going to execute that.
We're chatting with Trent Cull. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us Mondays on the Future of the Flames as Pat. And Aaron Vickers along with you on this Monday, Vix.
Coach, one of those players that is new to you, I'm wondering your first impression on Parker Bell, who made his season debut with you over the weekend. I know it's a small sample size, only the one game and maybe a handful of practices, but what have you seen out of him thus far?
Yeah, it's been good. We had two team practices this past week. And so it was good. Actually, one team practice this past week. He's had about three or four skates with us now, and I thought it was good. I thought he came in, he skates well. You know, he hadn't played for over a week, so he's trying to find his legs a little bit there too. And he had said that, and also obviously the pace of hockey is going to be a little bit better and higher than I think where he was just playing. So, but I thought he was fine. I thought he was solid. I thought he did a real decent job, and you know, I had him playing, I think, right into the last 2 minutes there of the hockey game in a tight game, right? So I thought he did a good job, and I'm sure we'll warrant himself some more ice time here as we go.
He's one of the players coming up from junior. You've had Sam Morton now, a free agent signing out of the NCAA, as you mentioned before. You've got him. You've had him for 10 games now, 3 goals, 2 assists for 5 points. Now that you've seen him over the course of a longer stretch of work, I guess, what impresses you about his game? How does he fit in so far?
Yeah, no, I think he came in kind of busting the door now. It's great, you know, and he's a skilled hockey player. And then, you know, I think he's a smart, intelligent player. He distributes the puck well. Now it's just going to be the thing of keeping to doing that day in, day out, shift in, shift out, the consistency of it here at the pro level, right? Like, probably for him, he plays 10 games in about a month and a half or 2 months in college, you know, and all of a sudden he's been here, what, 2 weeks? You know, not even 3 weeks, mm-hmm. He's played 10 games here. So I think it's that'll be the test for him, is to keep his foot on the gas, and can he do that? And that's something we've already talked about, you know, and just making sure, because it's a more physical, and it's a more, I don't even know if I should say it's more physical than college hockey. It's the idea of how much puck battles matter,
right,
and how hard you have to be on every little play to make sure that you're getting possession or to keep possession of a puck, and how much that matters. And I think that's stuff that he's learning as we go.
Last player I'm just curious to ask you about is obviously going to be a familiar name in Jacob Pelletier, who had 3 more points over the weekend. It really seems like he's settling back in with the Wranglers right now. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think Jacob is getting better as we move along here. I think probably the big thing will be with Jacob is just making sure he's as comfortable as he can possibly can be in contact situations after having a tough injury. And I think that's always something for every injury guy when they come back into it. And so that stuff, situations he's going to find himself in here probably more just because he's playing a lot more, playing in all situations for us. And so, but the good thing is that he's starting to feel his way. I feel like I can't go back to say I know what Jacob Pelletier was like 2 years ago when he was playing here full time, right? Or last year. I didn't have that experience. But I think he's getting more confident with himself and his abilities. And I think that's like the first thing that happens. You start feeling good, things start happening. And then from there, you know, more and more confidence is growing on that. And I feel like he's kind of turned in the corner over the last, say, week and a half.
Trent, we're chatting with Trent Cull, head coach of the Calgary Wranglers on this Monday. How are you? You've got some bodies on defense right now, and it feels like you're kind of balancing and rotating some different guys through. How are you going about kind of getting your 6 each and every night and rotating through some different players? What's the philosophy been there?
2 things for the most part is always health-wise. So, like, just like Jeremy Poirier, he got nicked up in the first game, didn't finish that game for us, tried to come back out to play, wasn't working out, so he didn't play the second night. And then through that, it's always, there's a little bit of, whether you earn it or not. And then there's always talks with my boss about what we think is the best recipe for, you know, our 6 every night. And the other thing is that you just can't stick maybe 6 guys in the lineup. Like, there's got to be some cohesiveness. There's got to be something, hey, we think this is a good pair for this guy. And we're always trying to, we try to put guys in situations to succeed is our big thing. And sometimes, unfortunately, there's going to be guys that sit out because of that. But we also want to make sure guys are playing their hardest and doing their best, because at the end of it all, that's what kind of warrants guys getting in the lineup as well, too. So
the Poirier situation, you said fairly minor. That's something that probably isn't going to be too worrisome. Would that be accurate to say?
I think so, yeah. Like, I'm hoping Jeremy's going to be an option here for us this coming Thursday, Friday.
Okay.
But it's still not quite clear. And then so we'll see how that the week progresses for us.
Gotcha. Okay. Ilya Solovyov gets the recall once again, and I know that that's always something that you like to see. It's been a while since we've seen Ilya at the NHL level. How have you seen him grow throughout the year with a couple of different NHL stints? He's gotten to some games at the NHL level. He's been obviously huge for you at the AHL level. How have we seen Solovyov grow and evolve throughout the year?
Yeah, first of all, I think it's great for any young guy to get his first sniff at playing in the NHL, right? And so they get a chance to go up there, they get a chance to see what's going on, they get a chance to see if, first they can belong, and then after they're there, like, hey, this is what I know I need to do better now, too, you know? And so sometimes there's those talks that I think it's invaluable. I mean, and you don't know that. You're just taking it kind of from someone else, like, say, the coach's advice or, you know, so now they know, they get a taste of that. And they understand, hey, you know what I'm talking to you about there. And that's kind of like the lights are on, right? So I think that's a big part with Ilya. But I think overall, his consistency, we all have bad games here or there. But, I think Ilya's been really strong for us. He's really good defensively for us. He plays a firm game, which I think is key. And I think that's something that translates to the National Hockey League. And also, too, like, he's one of our underrated best, like, puck movers. He's simple. He makes plays. Sometimes it leads to mistakes. I understand that. But we have to sometimes live with that at our level, because we know in the end you know, it's going to make him a better hockey player, right? And so I think that he's done a pretty good job, and we certainly miss him. We know that when he's not in the lineup, we miss him, his defensive play, but also his puck movement as well.
I know the Flames were, and Ryan Huska was talking about this earlier on Monday, was talking about how they were looking for Soloviev to really improve his first pass and his exit pass. Is that something that you've seen specifically some good improvement on?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that I think he started this way this year with that as well. I think it's just more that we go back to the thing of consistently doing it. And the part here that happens is you can do it. You can have some blemishes. It may not cost you. But when you get the chance to do it at the NHL level, unfortunately, it's how many times you can do that in a row is what matters. And that's what it does. It's not 5 out of 10. Or you've got to make it 10 out of 10 times. And that's just because you're playing at such a high level and because that's what the National Hockey League is. So I totally get it, what Hoska's saying there, and that's something that we've certainly worked on with Ilya, and I think that there has been improvement there throughout the year.
How, and I'm curious for you, as the coach of this team and looking for playoff success, you're clinched, you know you're playing postseason hockey, for Ilya to get some NHL hockey and NHL action down the stretch and then come back to your group and play some really meaningful hockey, that feels like it could be a real nice thing for him too.
Yeah, it is. But there's so many different parts to that, too. Like, sometimes when they go up, they don't play as many minutes as they play when they come back. And as you can imagine, the American Hockey League is different style than the NHL. Not because we're trying to play a different way. It's just that it is. You know, it's different levels of hockey. So I always want our guys here, especially, you know, our best players. Of course, I want them here all the time. I'm selfish and love to win, too, right? But I think it's awesome that they're playing at the NHL level. They're going to go and play. And we want to make sure when they get back, you know, that we can ease that transition or get them involved as quick as possible, because they're absolute huge pieces for us down here. And, you know, you have to have all your players the way we are this year, how it's been and wherever it is. Like, we can't afford to have guys not being playing at the best of their game. It's the American Hockey League playoffs. We've gone through a lot of transactions. Our better players are going to have to be the best players on the ice for us every night to give us an opportunity to win a playoff.
Trent, just before we kind of set up the final stretch of the season for your group, I did want to ask you about a guy that some people in this city might recognize. I know that David Cilia's dad used to play for the football team here in the city and the Stampeders, and he's got a contract for next season with the Wranglers, and he's playing some hockey with you right now, got his first game in over the weekend. Just your first impressions of David Cilia as he joins the group after his season in Wisconsin.
Yeah, no, welcome addition. You know, probably had his eyes wide open the first few shifts in Bakersfield. We had played the night before. I think Bakersfield was pretty charged up to play the next night. I felt like we had a really strong game our first night. So we got the best of the Condors the second night, and this guy gets thrown in there. David does the second night, right? So, but he had a great experience. I think it was solid for him. He's good in the face-off circles, which is something we desperately need. You know, that's an area that's not a strength for us as a team. And so we need guys to win face-offs. So that was good. I think he was our best guy that night. So that's a positive. I think for him, it's just going to be, can he catch up to the pace of the American Hockey League level from, you know, from college in time to be a part of our playoff run, right? And so, but I had no problem with Dave. I thought he had some compete in him. And so it was good for him to get his first taste, that's for sure.
Okay, just a few more with Trent Cull, head coach of the Wranglers. Trent, you've got four to finish against Abbotsford, two here, two there. Kind of a playoff-like schedule, and then you go into the playoffs. Just to have four straight against the same team going in to the postseason. Hell, you might even play them in the playoffs. We don't know. But the fact that you kind of have that ability to get into a playoff mindset with the final four regular season games, how beneficial could that be?
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, it's like I said, it's trying to find the measures of what we're doing right now to make sure we're ready in 2 weeks, right? So even though we're playing the same team, I mean, we're not going to make it into a playoff round, you know what I mean? We're going out to play our game, and we're going to get our guys ready to make sure that we're playing the best that we possibly can. But also, too, like, we're having some intros, right? We're going to have some new guys play some games. We got to, it's a delicate balance over the next 2 weeks, I think, of trying to find the right recipe for our group and get new guys in to see if they can be part of that for our playoff run. And so I think it's just all hands on deck, making sure our team is, from one game, is just making sure they're playing the best game that's in front of them. And I think that is my focus for right now for our group, and for that is focusing on Thursday. And then who knows, it could be half of a different group that's going on Friday as well. But it'll be the same focus for that group on Friday. So that's my thoughts and kind of the way I'm going about it for right now. And, you know, the organization, that's the plan right now.
Grand total of 1 point between you and your old team in Abbotsford. Just how much of a challenge are they going to be to wrap up the season?
I think that, I just was doing a little bit of looking there, but I think that, you know, Vancouver's getting themselves a little more healthy. So because of that, they've got more players that have been sent back down to Abbotsford. So they'll probably be at their maximum and their strength, which is, you know, we get to see them. And they've been a solid team all year, right? So, it'll be a good test for us, and we look forward to it. And then, I mean, old teams are always like one of those games.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see how it goes this weekend for you. Well, you've got two at home Thursday and Friday of this week, and then the following weekend you're into Abbotsford to finish off the season. So good luck in these two at home, your final two home regular season games, Trent, and we'll reconvene next week. Thank you so much, as always, for the time, hey?
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Trent Cull is the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. Joins us Mondays here on Flames Talk. A couple of other notes as we wrap up the future of the Flames, Vix, because the Wranglers are going to be getting some reinforcements, right, or some new bodies in. So the Vancouver Giants of the Western Hockey League went out in 5 games in round one to the Everett Silvertips, which means both Sam Honzek and Jaden Lipinski of the 2023 draft class are available and are likely to be joining the Wranglers here very soon. So I think Honzek and Lipinski will be available for the Wranglers, and I think at the very least we'll be joining them to practice and to be around the team. So I think you can look forward to Lipinski and Honzek joining the Wranglers, and a second-round pick of this year's past draft, Etienne Morin of the Moncton Wildcats, who went out in 4 games to Chicoutimi in the Q playoffs. I think Morin is going to join the Wranglers as well. Now, whether or not these guys play or not, there's 4 games to go. You just heard Trent. That was one of the reasons why I wanted to ask Trent about the balance of getting guys, veterans in versus young players, because no guarantee that all these guys are going to play. Like Joni Yermo's been there. There's just a lot of things that they're balancing right now as they are going to the playoffs and they are still fighting for
home ice
in the standings, home ice in the standings, so on and so forth. But curious to see if a guy like Yermo gets in. Does a Morin get in on the back, especially with Poirier being hurt, for instance? Does a guy like Lipinski or Honzek make their American League debuts? That's going to be very interesting as they'll be joining the team. Also, Hunter Brustevich, I'm getting closer
there
to
nailing
that all the time. Hunter Brustevich of the Kitchener Rangers is a game away from advancing to round two of the Ontario Hockey League playoffs. Kitchener leads Erie 3-2 in that first round, best of 7. Game 6 with the Rangers up 3-2 is Tuesday, so see if the Rangers can punch their ticket to round two. That series got delayed because of the eclipse, I believe, and so they're not playing until Tuesday. So game 6, Kitchener Erie goes Tuesday. See if the Rangers and Brustevich can advance or not. That's just your all-inclusive look at the future of the Flames.
Did one of the teams look up without glasses?
I'm not sure. I thought it might have been Pike who tweeted it out that a couple of the games got pushed back a couple of days because they wanted something to do with the eclipse.
Close to Niagara, which is the pinnacle of watching this, if I'm not mistaken.
Might have very well been to do with that. Anyway, I can tell you, Game 6, Rangers and Erie goes on Tuesday. That'll wrap us up this hour, and that is the future of the Flames, brought to you by Oncolytics Biotech, fighting cancer by unleashing the power of the immune system. To learn more about how they intend to empower cancer patients, visit OncolyticsBiotech.com.